Let's Talk is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to Let's Talk, episode 36, brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network. Howdy all, Father Corey Stika here. Welcome to Let's Talk, our weekly SQPN community podcast. Glad you could join us. We've got a couple of returning panelists who have been on before. First, Mike Denz, welcome. Glad you could join us again.
Great to be here.
And Father Chip Hines, I haven't been on with you, but you were on before with Dom.
I was on with Dom. Able to be on. Yeah. No, so it's great to be here again, Father Corey. And, you know, it's always a pleasure to work with SQPN as always.
Oh, yes. Well, like I said, we're glad to have you. Glad to have you here. So before we get into our topic, just kind of catch up with what's been going on with you guys. What's been going on with you, Mike?
Well, we just had, I don't know if it's defined as a blizzard. I live in the Buffalo area.
Oh yeah.
And the previous week to when this is going to be aired, it was the highs of like 2 for a couple of days in a row with blowing and drifting snow. And the nice thing is I didn't have to go to work. I was able to just stay home, and the bad thing is that so did my wife, and she made me take down the Christmas decorations, so you know, it was as relaxing as I'd hoped. You know, still doing pilgrimages, going to be doing a pilgrimage to Poland for the first time in coming up in October, and still working as the director of evangelization and catechesis at Sacred Heart Parish here in the Diocese of Buffalo. And really enjoying that as well.
That's great.
Yeah, excellent. I think I mentioned it before, but if you need a priest for Poland, I'd go back in
my
heartbeat.
My pastor is Polish, so he's got the corner on that. He's really helping out with that. He's going to be taking us and showing us around, and excited. So
I'd go back to Poland in a heartbeat. How about you, Father Chip? Now, you said your new parish, you're all settled in, or?
I am settled in. I resigned as pastor at the Matthew 13 Collaborative because of my continued health issues with my leg and my foot. And so now I'm sort of recovering here in another parish in Massachusetts, Natick, Mass, and sort of filling in where I can fill in and doing stuff that I can do and, and trying to, keep my brain sharp and everything else. It's been a long year and, but it's starting to come around and I'm excited about that and looking forward to starting a new adventure in a new parish somewhere and we'll see how it goes.
Well, awesome. Yeah. It's recovery is difficult, so I can understand.
Yeah, it sure is.
Well, around here, we've actually had a pretty decent winter. We haven't had quite the bitter cold like the East did, like y'all in the East did. You know, it's kind of funny. Yeah. I mean, you see places like Chicago that had, 20, 30, 40 below. And for around here, that happens every winter. We have a cold. We have a cold snap like that every winter where it'll be like 2 weeks of actually it's looking at the weather forecast. It's this coming week, where it's going to be bitter, bitter cold for a while. Last winter was really bad where we had probably a month that it didn't get above zero, much less above freezing, and that's just horrible. But our bad weather is coming. We're actually I've already put out notice on our Facebook page that the mission masses may or may not happen tomorrow. We've got a storm moving in. Now, we don't get Buffalo sized snowfalls. We don't get feet at a time, but they're still predicting up to 8 inches tomorrow. So. That's anything enough to sneeze at. Yeah. I mean, my car only has about a 5-6 foot ground clearance. So you get that much snow on the road, car might not make it.
What are you driving, Corey?
Ford Escape.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it's got a decent ground clearance. Actually, it's more than 5 or 6, but it's a decent ground clearance, but it's not that decent.
You have four-wheel drive?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Gotta be. You live in Montana.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my other cars, my Dodge Charger with the V8 is a lot of fun, but it doesn't like that much snow or ice.
Oh, gosh, no. No.
It's fun, but...
Yeah, that's a fun car. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a General Lee.
This is the newer version, but it's a 2007.
Never snowed or rained or anything there, so that I know that they never had any weather whatsoever.
they're down in Georgia, so
exactly.
Those our friends down in Georgia, you know, they know that the weather's never bad down there.
Ask Sarah Fabulous about that.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, when they get a little bit of snow or ice down there, it shuts down. So.
Oh, I know. It's for me, it's funny. I know that Sarah gets angry with me every time I kind of laugh because they get an inch of snow and it's Snowmageddon. You know, meanwhile, poor Mike Denz is up in Buffalo. He's got like 6 feet of snow on the ground, you know, and, you know, you're in Montana. I'm in New England. You know, it's crazy, you know, the amount of snow we get. It's so funny. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, no, I saw that very early when I was in the Air Force. This, you know, first winter I was at my regular duty station, and we had an ice storm move in. This is Southern Illinois, right outside of St. Louis. And I'm pulling up to a four-way stop, and I'm slowing down. And I know how to handle ice because I grew up and lived in North Dakota, Montana.
Sure.
So I knew how to handle ice. And I get to this four-way stop, and across comes a guy with Georgia plates and just slides right through the intersection. And he had the brakes on. I could see the wheels weren't turning, but the car kept moving. It's like, okay, I got to watch out for Southerners.
That's right. Southern drivers.
So
I'm still teaching my 18-year-old reluctant daughter how to drive. I took her out in the snow for the first time. A few weeks ago, and it never occurred to me to tell her that you just can't try to go as fast as you normally would when there's you know, when it's slick and snowy, and she's just like plowing through, and I'm like, okay, wait, you got to slow down. And of course she's mad at me because I'm making her drive in the snow, so it was a little tense for a while as I saw my life flash before my eyes, but I eventually got it.
We've had priests from India, places like India and Africa, come up here and literally have never seen snow until they get the winter here. And they're trying to learn how to drive in it. And it's like, we grow up with it. We're used to it.
That must be comical.
Yeah, it gets interesting to say the least. But
that's funny.
So anyways, getting on to our, you know, kind of our topic of the day. This past week, we had the Feast of St. John Bosco.
Right.
On Thursday, one that I completely missed. I just completely spaced it when I was setting up for the mass, and I get home and went, oops. Oh, well. It happens, by the way. Priests do that. You know, we happen to look at the calendar wrong or whatever. And oh, oops. Oh, well, sorry.
Right.
But see, John Bosco is one of those priests that, in my opinion, one of those saints, in my opinion, I think we need some more of both priests and lay people by his model. Now, Mike, since you are director of evangelization and catechesis, he's a saint that probably is near and dear to your heart because he really fits that mold.
Yeah, we were indoctrinated at Franciscan University by our catechesis professor at the time, who started the program for a specialization in catechesis. If you were getting a theology degree, you could specialize. And one of her top two patron saints was, if not her really her top one, was St. John Bosco. Sure. A lot of people might realize that the conference in Steubenville, one of their summer conferences that they have, the one for catechesis, is called the St. John Bosco Conference, because that's what she named it. So we realized early on what an important patron and model he was, and particularly for evangelization of youth. He was simply a master at it. He was you know, if he would have had a pizza place, he would have been ordering pizza for the kids too. I mean, he knew exactly how to entertain them and draw them in and get them to be interested in him and show him, show the kids through the boys, obviously, that he was interested in them, that he loved them and cared about them. And then once he had that established, he would, you know, begin to talk to them about Jesus and bring Christ into their life. So, yeah, I mean, he's really someone you can look at as a model for whether it's youth ministry or catechesis and evangelization of youth.
Yeah, and what I like about him, Corey, is Father Corey and Mike, he saw a problem and he went after it to fix it. And right. I think, you know, and a lot of saints are that way. You know, they see a problem and they go to fix it. And I think that's one of the things that we can take away from Don Bosco's life is, you know, do we see the issues of our day and do we attempt to do what we can to step in and fill a hole or volunteer or, you know, sign up to do whatever. I mean, it's a thing that the saints do, and it's something that we need to do more of, you know?
Well, and, you know, let's talk about what he did. You know, he's a saint from Turin, Italy in, you know, the mid to late 1800s. And we're like, okay, why does this person have anything to do with us? That was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, as far as, you know, Americans are concerned today. But he grew up, first of all, in a poor family. He grew up in an agricultural family, which I appreciate greatly because, of course, you know, living in an agricultural area. But his family was very poor because his dad died at a young age. Mm. You know, he died, I think he was like 2 years old, 3 years old, something like that. Very, very young age. And so he basically had to grow up very quickly to help work the farm, raise sheep, things like that, you know, just so that they could live. And I'm taking a lot of this actually off of the Catholic Online site where they talk about they've got all the saints listed. By the way, we also, I think if you go to sqpn.com, we still have all the old saint cast episodes, and there might be one for, I forgot to look to see if there's one for John Bosco
That would be cool if you want to look.
But he grew up, again, you know, very poor family, but his mother encouraged them from a young age to help the poor. And so that was something that he was, I want to say indoctrinated, but he was raised with. Even when they were poor, she would still reach out to those who were even more in poverty than they were. Sure. And at a young age, he realized that he was called to do that, to serve the poor as a priest. And so at the age of 12, he actually went off to work as a hired farm laborer and also to work towards becoming a priest. I mean, how many, you know, I don't know about you, Father Chip, but at the age of 12, I definitely wasn't thinking about being a priest.
Not really, Father Corey. You know, I mean, sure, the thought may have passed my young head, but I certainly wasn't preparing for it at that point. No. I hear you. No, I mean, that's the thing, though. They you know, it goes back to the example of his mother, obviously. It goes back to probably not having a father in his life and in his future work. Dealing with poor boys, you know, providing that kind of father figure. And I think that's something he, you know, you're outlining very well that he didn't have. And now he tries to bring it to other boys. And I think that, you know, obviously he's a saint. So that was an awesome thing to do.
Yeah.
It's not like he was going to seminary either. He just had a priest who was teaching him.
At first he did a priest who's now a saint, Saint Joseph Cafasso. Joseph Cafasso. He took him under his wings and kind of gave him the basic education, because this was a time in Italy and frankly here in the United States as well, you know, early 1800s, when there wasn't a public school system like we have today, where every kid, regardless of rich or poor, you know, regardless of race, regardless of income, can go to school. This was a time when the schools were largely private, you know, like by the church or by other organizations, and you had to have money to go to school. And if you didn't have money, you didn't go to school. So he didn't have much of an education, but this St. Joseph took him under his wings and gave him the education he needed, then where he could then go on to seminary and become a priest.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's interesting reading about the saints of, you know, the old saints, because that's especially the ones who became priests, and seeing the kind of education that they got. It's so much different from ours. And you sit mm-hmm. there and you wonder, it's, you know, what would that have been like? In actuality, though, I mean, when you think about it, people, even in the 20th century at Oxford, you know, and that's a university, they have that individual, I don't know if they still have it, but they had individual tutors for, you know, your classwork. And mm-hmm. so you got that one-on-one attention at the university level, and for clearly it works.
Right. Well, and it's, you know, and that's when we think of seminary today, for those who don't know, it really is on a university model.
Right.
I mean, with prayer, with other things tacked on, but it, you know, you have your regular class schedule, just like every other university has regular class schedules. And I mean, it's not a, not one-on-one, like you said, Father Chip, you've got your classes and you do have your formation is one-on-one and, you know, things like that, but it's a very different environment than I think, seminary was back at the time of St. John Bosco and before.
Right, right. No, I think one of the complaints of the guys when I was in the seminary was that they felt almost that it was too stressed on that end of it, you know, that the mm-hmm. university side of it was far more important, and guys really wanted the spirituality and that stuff emphasized more than it was. But, you know, every I'm sure that St. John Bosco probably complained about his seminary life too.
Oh, yeah. You know?
That's what seminarians do.
Seminarians complain and we think we know better.
Oh. That's right. Exactly. And then you get ordained and you realize, no, that was the right thing to do.
You know, yeah, I will admit there are a few complaints I had against seminary that I hold even more now as pastor.
Ah, there you go.
Issues of what they put their focus on more than they focused it.
Absolutely. You know?
So that would be a whole nother very interesting topic for Talk.
Yeah.
On another day. But let's kind of roll back to St. John Bosco.
That's right.
Like you said, I'm sure he had his issues too. One thing he saw as, you know, he figured out very quickly what his calling was to be as a priest. And that's something I think is very interesting, because when you're a new priest, and again, Father Chip could discuss this, your head's swimming just trying to figure out what it means to actually be a priest. You know, you've gone through these 6-8 years of seminary, whatever it is.
Right.
And now you're trying to figure out, what does this actually mean to live as a priest? And he saw very quickly that his focus was first of all on the poor, which is understandable because that's what mm-hmm. he grew up with. But then he saw that so many of the city prisons in Turin were filled with children.
Yeah.
Teenagers. Especially,
yeah. Like 12 to 18, I think I read.
Yep.
And he saw that as a major problem. And obviously it was. And I think he rightly discerned that it was, you know, a poverty issue, not a bad person issue.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, that's again, this, and this is where I see the connection more to today, is we've got neighborhoods that are like this.
Sure. Absolutely. No you question. Know. And wouldn't it be nice if we could, if we could raise the money to go into places like that, those neighborhoods and bring Catholic education? You know, I mean, it's right. hard right now. I don't know about you, Father Corey, and you, Mike. I mean, I see Catholic education is so different now than it was in John Bosco's day. Mm-hmm. You know, now it's focused on people that can actually pay tuition. And it's a different model
for the schools. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not always possible for, you know, for everyone. And right. I've directed so many different, whether they call them CCD or faith formation programs or something in between. You know, you have a lot of kids in that age group and younger coming who are unchurched, who, you know, don't go to Catholic schools, but often they hardly even go to Mass and are very uneducated in the faith. And here in 2019, for a while now, we probably are on our third generation of Sunday school education, which means that even their grandparents aren't necessarily thinking of it as important. When I first started out doing this 20 years ago, we'd hear about the grandparents bringing their kids, their grandkids to a religious ed if the parents didn't care. But now even the grandparents might not have that much concern for going to church or going to religious ed. So it's become quite a problem.
Well, that's something I've definitely seen here is, you know, a lot of people talk about, well, so-and-so is Catholic, so-and-so should be at Mass, so-and-so should be doing this. And it's like, you know, they haven't set foot in 20 years, 30 years, and now their kids aren't setting foot. Right. And their kids don't understand the importance of Mass. And maybe because of the grandparents, the kids are at least getting to religious education. One problem we have here is religious education is seen as free babysitting on a Wednesday night. So, you know, they get a meal and free babysitting on a Wednesday night. So, hey, great. So the kids get there, but the parents never do. And the grandparents are struggling with, you know, the importance of the faith in their lives, you know.
Sure.
You know, so it's.
No, and I think it's something that I'm guessing that this has happened before in the history of the church, that there was time that and we just need to kind of figure out, you know, the solution this time. Although I think it's a little harder now that the you know, the actual world is lined up against us in a way. Although I will say Don Bosco faced, you know, trouble from the government and other priests. Traditionalist priests who thought he was taking kids away from the parish. So it's interesting how
we never hear that complaint today. Priests robbing from other parishes.
No, it never happens.
People going from parish to parish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, so what's old is new again. You know what I mean?
Well, one thing I jokingly say is humanity hasn't changed since the time of Jesus.
Correct.
We just have cooler toys.
That's a good way of putting it.
You know, I mean, we're still deep down. We're still the same. You know, because the time that St. John Bosco lived was a time of great upheaval in Italy politically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, he lived during the time of when Lateran Accords, they call it, where the Vatican city state was established within Rome because the papal states had been basically taken over by secular forces.
Right.
He lived during that time. So, I mean, you can imagine that if we live in upheaval now with a government against us, what do you think that time was like?
Right. No, you're right. And it's that way in other places around the world today, obviously. I mean, go to Iraq, go to Iran, you know, Iran, go to anywhere in the Middle East and watch how Egypt, where the Copts are basically gone. I mean, it's in Iraq where Christianity has almost been extinguished. We live in a far different world with far different capabilities of governments and states around the world that can destroy things it's a bigger scale now. But I mean, we've always had to deal with it. I mean, look at Jesus was put to death by the Roman government of the time. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's not like Jesus didn't fight the government. He fought the government too. I mean, it's been the continuous story of Christianity rubbing up against, you know, the forces that want to wipe it out.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and St. John Bosco's response to that wasn't, I think, what our human reaction is. And I think what so many of us in our parishes have done is to draw inwards. We're getting pushback from the government. We're getting pushback from these groups, from these people. So we need to just pull in and worry about keeping our parishes running. And when they come, we'll be there for them and be welcoming. And that's great. You know, we need to be welcoming people as they come into our parish, but we need to be going out. And I think that's I think the biggest thing we can learn from John Bosco is, first of all, we need to be reaching out to the children. We need to be reaching out to that high school age, that middle, you know, middle school, high school age, into young adult. And there's a lot of parishes that are doing that. They're doing things like Theology on Tap, which reaches kind of the young adult groups, stuff like that. But we need to be reaching out. We can't be the Catholic parishes never do well when we draw inward.
No, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the exact opposite of the Great Commission at the end of Matthew's gospel, you know, where go out into the world and do these things. And quite often it's scary for the parishioners. You know, you mentioned, you know, well, they come to us, we welcome them. And I'm like, well, yeah, after they're carefully vetted and make sure that they don't sit in your pew. And, you know, we make sure that they fit in with our model and how we run things here. And if we don't like them, they can shuffle off to the next parish. You know, we're not always as welcoming as we need to be, much less going out there and trying to draw them in.
Well, and it's I just today read an article. Rod Dreher, who, you know, he's a political commentator, and he's the one who was Catholic and then decided that the Catholic Church was too corrupt, so he went off to the Orthodox. But he had a good article today about, you know, Saint Blockbusters, that the Catholic Church is today in many ways where Blockbuster was in 2005. Blockbuster was arguing his almost exact quote. I don't have it up, but I'm kind of going off memories. 2005, Blockbusters was worried about how the DVDs would be laid out, not realizing in 10 years they'd be basically extinct.
Right.
You know, and we're in many ways worried about how our parishes are going to be laid out and how we're going to celebrate, you know, how we're going to do these big celebrations for Mass and everything, not realizing we're 20 years from the bell curve dropping off. And actually, I don't even think it's 20 years. I think in many, many places it's closer to a decade, you know? And so, because you come to our parishes and it's more obvious in these rural areas that are struggling with population issues to begin with, you know, these smaller towns like I live in, there aren't a lot of young people, or at least there aren't as many young people as there once were, because there aren't the jobs for them. And you come to Mass, and I've had Masses where I'm the youngest person there. And this is Sunday Masses.
I haven't had that yet on Sunday. I've had it during the week sometimes, but during daily Mass. But on Sunday, I would say that most of the time I'm not the youngest person there, because there's kids, and I thank God for that. But you're right. You're in a different demographic area, and you know, that's a different type of problem, probably than what we face here. And even though there are similarities, and probably I would be the same for Buffalo as well, I would imagine, Mike, that, you know, that, you know, you'd probably be in the same situation that we are here in Boston, I'd imagine.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've had schools and churches closing over the past 10 years or so. And, you know, there's larger, you know, areas, suburbs of Buffalo that have, you know, churches with several thousand families. But there's a lot of the little parishes maybe that were established in the early 20th century, ethnic parishes, you know, the Italian parish or the Irish parish, that, you know, people don't live around there that are going to church. And there's a church just up the road on up north, and then there's another church just a little bit south, you know, so there's only enough people for so many churches to survive. So, you know, it is a difficulty. And of course, everyone wants their church to survive. They want their parish to be the one that marches on, you know, not really, you know, it surprises me. But it doesn't surprise me when I see that instead of kind of banding together as Catholics and saying, let's all get together and be strong, at this, you know, at this plot of land, you know, and worship together, rather than, you know, fighting for whose church gets to stay open.
Right. Well, and the question, I think, in the bigger cities, the cities where you guys live, and you know, I saw that in Chicago when I was studying in that area, you know, all these little parishes that were, you know, my great-great-grandmother's uncle built that altar, and now you're going to tear it down type of thing. You know, but how do we go out into those communities? And it's the same issue here. I mean, like I said, you know, there are population issues here, but we have young people that we can go out and reach out to. We have young adults. We have, you know, kids. We have all these groups. How do we go out into those communities like John Bosco and reach out to them that aren't going to darken the door of our church except for maybe a funeral or a wedding to attend it?
I think it's the courage that we need, the courage that he had to do those mm-hmm. things. And I think, you know, sometimes it's easier for us to sit back and wait for them to come. And it's not just us that needs the courage. It's our people that need the courage too, because
right.
you and I, Father Corey, can't do this by ourselves.
No.
I mean, it's impossible. It would be an impossible task. And I think, you know, even John Bosco, you know, eventually had helpers.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think it's a matter of how do we do it? Well, we can certainly look to the models of the past. I like to look at the saints, and Don mm-hmm. Bosco is one of them. That I think we can look at. But I think it's a matter of we have to somehow encourage our people to have, you know, no fear, you know, to be right. able to go out into the community and talk about Jesus Christ without fear of ridicule, without fear of you know, having doors slammed in their face or, you know, people walking away from them or people thinking less of them. And I think that is the big issue of our time, is that people – are not as courageous as they should be, and we, the priesthood,
right.
The bishops, especially the bishops, are not as courageous as they should be.
Well, and that's one thing of hope in the church today is St. Paul Street Evangelization.
Yes,
a movement of teaching people to go out and evangelize on the street corner, but it's not sitting there with a Bible pounding it. You're all going to hell unless you become Catholic. It's we're here to pray with you. We're here to talk about what we believe. We've got pamphlets. We've got rosaries. We've got, you know, we're here to share.
Right.
We're not, you know, and I, as far as I understand, you know, like they don't go out and they're not sitting there yelling at people, come and talk to us about the Catholic faith. Come talk to us about the Catholic faith. Instead, it's we offer, you know, we're there to talk. You know, we're there to pray. I know of priests. I don't know them personally, but I know of priests who have gone to these, you know, where these evangelizers are standing and will set up a confessional, basically,
mm-hmm.
you know, a couple of folding chairs and out there, you know, on the street corner, literally, you know, out there in the square, out there in the park, hearing confessions of people who probably haven't, again, darkened the door in 20 years, door of the church in 20 years.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so it's movements like this that I think are things we can encourage and support.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think one of my priest mentors when I was in the seminary has a parish now up in a smaller city here in Massachusetts in the diocese. And he, during the summer, they have events down by, they have a river that runs through mm-hmm. it. And hey, that's a movie too. you know, they have festivals and stuff, and he goes down with parishioners, and they have a booth set up. He sets up the chairs for confession, like you said, and they sing songs to encourage people to come over and see what's going on. They, you know, they're out there and mm-hmm. I think that's something we can be better at, where we just need to be better at it. And I think not until we're all, you know, kind of turning in that same direction, we're going to see pockets of it and pockets yeah. of great faith, but we're not going to see the great change that we need, that I think most of us would say we need at this point in time.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing that St. Bosco teaches us is his amazing faith and trust in God.
Mm-hmm.
Going into the situation with the idea that, well, okay, I see here the problem. Obviously, God sees the problem and has a solution. So I'm just going to make myself open and docile to the Holy Spirit and do what right. it takes to, you know, facilitate how God wants to handle this. And mm-hmm. then you have situations where, you know, he had the baker coming and complaining about a bill that needed to be paid, and a few minutes later, somebody would walk in and donate the exact amount needed to pay the baker, because God yeah. was just taking care of things. And while his workers were always, at their wit's end with, oh my gosh, I can't believe he's doing this, and what are we going to do? And he's spending money we don't have. He always was very faithful and knew that, well, if God wants this done, he's going to have to come up with the money. And it worked out, you know, because of his great faith and trust and what God wanted him to do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that, I mean, that's obvious, definite model for us is, you know, ultimately, you know, again, we as pastors, you know, Father Chip and I and other priests, you know, we need to put prayer first, you know, and we need to encourage our people to put prayer first.
Right.
And, you know, all of us priests struggle with that. We're busy. We've got other things we'd rather do. We got things we need to do. We got to go here. Bishop wants to meet with us. We've got this conference call. We got this. We got, you know, just like everybody else. But we first of all need to be kneeling before our Lord saying, okay, Lord, lead me, lead our parish.
Mm. One of the great things about this parish that I'm living in right now is they have a perpetual adoration chapel.
Oh, awesome.
It is absolutely fantastic. And there's someone in there all the time, one or two people, sometimes more. And it's a great, you know, it's a great thing to have in a parish if you can do it. And, you know, this particular parish in Natick, St. Patrick's, has been doing it for a long time. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place to sit with Christ all day long, all night long. And, you know, the prayers are answered, and they've had vocations out of here. And, you know, there's just been a lot of stuff going on from, you know, that prayer. And I think, you know, the more we can do stuff like that, even if it's not 24 hours, that's fine. But maybe it's every week. Maybe it's an hour every day, whatever it is. There's things we can do that are effective. You know, like John Bosco was.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and so.
Anyway, one of my favorite gospel, John, and in John 6 in the beginning, a lesson, you know, for how Jesus was forming his priests, but also for all of us, was when he presented them with a seemingly impossible problem of feeding, you know, 5,000 men and probably another 6,000 or 7,000 women and children. And they come to him with, well, all we have is these 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. So what could we possibly do? And Jesus is like, well, if you come to me, let me show you, you know, and they brought their meager offerings. This is what we have, which is not even up to the task of, you know, feeding a couple of people. And Jesus turns it into taking care of this huge problem. And how often do we not do that? You know, do we not go to adoration and say, okay, Lord, I have a problem that there's no way I can handle. What do I do? And he provides you with what's needed.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. No question about it. And I think that's one of the things that we have to, you know, continue to promote, all of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whatever our position, you know, in life is, whatever our vocation is in life, we need to be, you know, bringing and drawing people to prayer and into Christ himself. I mean, it's just an important part of what we do, and it's what Don Bosco did.
Yep. So absolutely. And so he's definitely a good example for us. And this is I think a good place to kind of, unless you have more to say about John Bosco, I think it's a good place to kind of wrap up this discussion.
Sure. No, that's great. I mean, he, you know, I would just say anyone who's listening, please just take a look at him and take a look at his life. And you know what? Don't stop there. Take a look at bring the saints into your life. Let them help you. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the things I constantly preach about, is letting the saints be in your life so that they can help you, you know, bring you along. And, you know, we look to them as not just, you know, these old people that lived a long time ago, but as our heroes.
Yeah. They really are our
role
models.
People would come up to St. John Bosco and ask them, you know, how do you do this? How is it that you draw all these young boys into and teach them and get them to, be so good, he would simply say, I love them. That was right. His answer. I love them. And, you know, how simple, but how profound. And it taught me a lesson, because I remember when I first, started ministry professionally, I was in my late 20s and teenagers drove me nuts. I didn't like them, much less love them. And they could tell. I wasn't, you know, I was almost like they're the necessary evil part of my job. I have other things I like to do, but I got to deal with these teens. And I was a miserable failure at any sort of ministry when it came to youth until I lightened up and I started, looking past, typical teenage behavior and seeing who they were and what they were like and loving them. And it was really that simple for the light switch to go on and say, I have to love them genuinely, not just, kind of play the role, but right. genuinely care for them.
Absolutely.
No question.
Excellent. Well, that's a good place to wrap that discussion up. And it was, and it's an example for us today. So, by the way, I wanted to make sure to mention that there's a book put out by Ignatius Press, St. John Bosco and St. Dominic Savio by Catherine Beebe. Great book. And then there's a movie that was done in Italy that Ignatius Press also provides, St. John Bosco, Mission to Love. Both excellent resources for learning more about this great saint. So we'll have links to those. You can order them through Amazon and SQPN will get a little cut of the proceeds if you do that as well, which is a good
thing. That's pretty sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, and speaking of SQPN, we want to thank you once again for listening to Let's Talk and the other SQPN podcasts. We have some great shows that we're able to produce due to your help. And we thank you for listening to our shows, for commenting on them, for liking them, for subscribing to them, for sharing them. If you like what you hear on Let's Talk, please share it around, post it on Facebook and Twitter and let others hear about it. You can listen to our, of course, we have other shows as well that you can find on SQPN.com. Personal favorite of mine, of course, is Secrets of Doctor Who, Secrets of Star Trek, because I'm on those and enjoy those immensely. Those are a lot of fun. We've got Secrets of Technology, which I'm also able to be on every couple of weeks or so, along with Joanna Mercier, and Dom Bettinelli, of course, is on every week as our host, and a couple others. We talk about technology from not quite as geeky a perspective as you might hear from your typical geek tech podcasts. So check that out. Definitely want to thank those who have supported SQPN both in the past and currently support. Especially want to thank those who are supporting SQPN through our Patreon site, where you can subscribe for a monthly donation to SQPN and really support our shows to keep them going. We like to support or to thank our patrons by name. So this week I want to thank John T., Victor L., Tammy L., Kevin G., and Colleen R. Thank you, and thank all of our Patreons for your support. And if you wish to join them in supporting SQPN, you can go to SQPN.com/give. Please do that, and to show how you can support, how much you enjoy our podcasts by supporting us so we can keep doing them. So as our kind of our tradition here on Let's Talk, we're going to go to our picks of the week. I hope both of you have got picks. So if you do, Mike, would you like to go first?
Yeah, sure. My pick for the week is my favorite author, at least one of them, Father Jacques Philippe. He is a French religious priest who writes. He's a retreat master and just a master of spirituality. And he writes about spirituality and how to pray, particularly mental prayer. And he has a great book called A Time for God, which helps you to understand mental prayer, what it is and what it isn't. Highly recommend that. Any of the books he writes are excellent, but that one, as well as Searching for and Maintaining Peace, is great. It's Philippe is Philippe. You can find them on Amazon, or the publisher in the States is Scepter. Of course, you can also find it on Amazon. But highly recommend anything by Father Jacques Philippe.
Excellent. Excellent. You have to check that out. Very good thing. How about you, Father Chip? What do you have for us?
Well, it'll come as no surprise to both of you that kind of know me. I'm going to recommend a movie that I watched recently. You can get it on the streaming services. It's called The Bookshop. And it's based on a Penelope Fitzgerald novel. Penelope Fitzgerald was the niece of Ronald Knox, and she was from the Knox family. She wrote a lot of interesting sort of literature. She was an Oxford grad, all kinds of educated she was a very educated woman for the middle part of the 20th century. Anyway, The Bookshop, it stars Emily Mortimer, and it's a quiet little film that kind of shows the human nature of people, sometimes the good, sometimes the bad, and what, you know, human interaction can do to people, what our actions can do to others. And I think it's a kind of an important thing to see in this age of, the internet and social media, where people don't seem to care what they do, having effect on others. But The Bookshop, it's worth your time. It's an excellent, excellent little film.
Yeah, excellent. Definitely have to check that out as well. Lots of good stuff to check out. Well, for my pick, I'm going with a book, but I'm going with a fiction book, a new fiction book that just came out. And it does tie into Secrets of Doctor Who quite a bit, because it is Doctor Who Scratch Man, written by Tom Baker, who Doctor Who fans know as the fourth Doctor, the fourth yes. actor to play the Doctor. One of the most popular still to this day. I mean, he was the Doctor 40 years ago, and he's still considered to be one of the favorites of all time. Well, he had written this screenplay called Scratch Man that was originally considered to be for a movie. They actually wanted to do a Doctor Who movie based on it, but it got shelved for whatever reason, probably money and whatever.
Probably money, yeah.
You know, all the usual. So he has rewritten it as a novel and just recently released it. And I'm about a third of the way through the audiobook version of it and really enjoying it. It's a lot of fun. The principle is that they land in Earth. Let me see. I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was kind of in the past a little bit, remote Scottish island. And there's these scarecrows that are attacking the population of this island. And so, of course, it's up to the Doctor and his companions, Harry Sullivan and Sarah Jane Smith, to find out what's going on and solve the problem and save the day, as the Doctor always does. Mm-hmm. So check it out. It's a lot. If you're a fan of Doctor Who, it's a lot of fun. It really does read especially listening to it, because it's Tom Baker doing the voice. He's reading the book. So, of course, Tom Baker gets to pull out his personality. It really reads like a Doctor Who episode. So check it out. It's a lot of fun. I've really been enjoying it. It's spooky. It's scary. You know, I've been listening to it at night and it's kind of like, okay, I better turn this off. But no, it's
especially in the middle of nowhere, Montana, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Are there any scarecrows around? No, I'm good. But so check it out.
That Doctor Who awesome.
Scratchman. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
It's a lot of fun. And like I said, I'm enjoying the audiobook because it is Tom Baker. So he gets to pull his personality out as the Doctor. Well, thank you both very much for coming on. Father Chip, where can people find you?
Well, certainly they can find me at my Twitter handle. It's Chines, @Chines, C-H-I-N-E-S. And that's the best way to get me right now. And I am writing some reviews for CatholicDigest.com. So if you want to check out CatholicDigest.com, you can find some of my stuff there, too. I'm going to be doing one on a movie called The Apparition. And I think people will want to check that out.
Mm. Oh, excellent. Excellent. And Mike, where can people find you?
Well, I'm on Facebook, although there's probably a lot of Michael Denzes on Facebook. But if you see one guy with a really long grayish beard, that's me. On both of my websites, the one at our parish that I predominantly keep going is sacredheartshrine.org. That's sacredheartshrine.org. And I have a blog on there. Or for the pilgrimages that we do, that's takeapilgrimage.com. Go to takeapilgrimage.com and you can find how to contact me there as well as check out our pilgrimages.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. And I'm Father Corey Stika. Once again, you can find me at my website, frcorey.org, where I post my homilies. You can find me on Facebook, Father Corey Stika, and my Twitter handle is Fr. Corey Stika. If you have any feedback about this episode or any episode of Let's Talk, you can send that to letstalk@sqpn.com. No apostrophe, of course. And once again, if you wish to give to SQPN, you can go to sqpn.com/give. Thank you very much for listening, and God bless.